Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of One on One with me, Matthew Carrigage. On today's episode, we return to the world of football, which is quite fitting with the Euros concluding and domestic football in Europe just around the corner. My guest today has made over 300 appearances playing for some of the biggest clubs in Germany, and he spent the last 3 seasons in Australia. He is the attacking midfield maestro, Alexander Baumjohann. I sat down with Alex in mid-July to discuss the challenges of playing for some of the Bundesliga's powerhouse clubs, those who have shaped him into the footballer he is today, and his experiences down under. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Alex, thank you so much for your time. First of all, how are you? I know you're currently in Sydney, which is in lockdown. How difficult has that been? And what are you doing to keep yourself active during the off-season?
I'm good, thank you. And also thanks for having me on the podcast. It's a difficult situation, especially now with the lockdown. There's not much to do, and I'm just trying to do some stuff at home, entertain my kids, and go out a bit sometimes for a walk to get some fresh air, and that's it at the moment. And hopefully the situation gets better soon and we go back to normal life.
We can only hope so. We know, especially around the world, there are certainly different situations. We saw the Euro a few days ago at the time of recording this, that didn't look like England was in any sort of lockdown, although it maybe should have been. Japan is heading for the Olympics, and won't have any fans in Tokyo, which is quite a shame, but alas, that is the situation of COVID as we continue to go through this. But first of all, I wanted to ask you, what inspired you to get into football? I know there can be different ways. There might be a player that you watched as a kid that really inspired you, a father. I'm just intrigued. How did you get into football?
Yeah, look, as you know, in Germany, football is sport number one, and everyone loves football. So when I was 3 years old, my mom, she just took me to football training in the under threes or under fours at the time. I just started to like it. And I think from there it started. But first it was my mom to get me into football. And then once I got the passion, obviously it was players like Ronaldo at the time or Zidane. So those two players were probably the most inspired players for me as a kid,
and two high quality players at that. Was there maybe a German player that also inspired that kind of the love of football, or was it particularly just the likes of Zidane, likes of Ronaldo, those really ultra creative attacking midfield players?
Yeah, when I was younger, Germany wasn't known for attractive football. That really just changed a bit later. At the time, Germany was more for physical football. And so I always liked creative football players with good technique and all this stuff. So Brazilian football was always my passion. And this is why I looked to those players. And after then, Ronaldinho. So I always loved Brazilian players.
And great choices, by the way. You were also, in your junior career, you were part of De Knappenschmiede, Schalke's academy, arguably one of the most well-renowned footballing factories in Germany. What was it like being a part of what is, one of the biggest academies in Germany? And how much did that shape the way you play football, you view football, and how much did it help your career going forward?
Yeah, I think I was fortunate to get this chance. Schalke scouted me, and I joined their youth system at age 12. So that was in the under 13s. And that was just, 2000. And they just started to build up the whole infrastructure for the academy. That was exactly when German clubs and the German Federation started to change the whole youth system. And as you can see, I think the Schalke Youth Academy it's not just one of the best in Germany. I would even say it's one of the best in the world when you see how many big players they just produced over the last 20 years. And yeah, I learned so much, and I'm so thankful that Schalke gave me this opportunity at the time. I played in the under-13s, under-15s, and under-17s, and then I signed my first professional contract when I was just 16, and made my debut in the Bundesliga. So I'm just thankful for this club, and yeah, Schalke will always be the number one club in my heart.
I love that. As this is the part of the podcast where I get a little bit unprofessional, as myself being a Schalke fan. just to get away from that quickly, have you been keeping up with the Bundesliga in your time in Australia? And how difficult was it to see Schalke relegated to the Bundesliga, to the Zweite Bundesliga, I should say?
Yeah, the time difference, sometimes it's a bit hard to watch games live, but I won't lie to say that every Sunday or Monday morning, once I wake up, I check the Bundesliga results, and especially the last 1.5 years with Schalke not winning many games was really tough to take, because I really never imagined that it could get to this point, that they would get relegated to the second division. So it's really hard, and I still can't really believe it. But yeah, I mean, this is football, and the only thing they can do now is looking forward and try to build something that they will get back to the first division as soon as possible, because I think Schalke is one of the 3-4 biggest clubs in Germany with amazing fans, probably the best fans in Germany, and they just belong to be in the first Bundesliga.
I concur, and now to get a little bit more professional again, you've played at a number of big clubs in German football, and your next move after your first in at Schalke was to head to Borussia Mönchengladbach, another one of the big clubs in the west part of Germany. How different was it moving from, you know, in terms of, I guess, a different part of the west side of Germany? Was it noticeably different how Gladbach kind of viewed football and their kind of culture compared to Schalke?
Yeah, Schalke at the time was maybe the closest club to Bayern, so we were really competing with Bayern to be the champions. And 2007 or 2006, Jupp Heynckes, the coach who also signed me from the youth team when I was at Schalke, and gave me my first professional contract, and since then is like a father figure for me in football, signed with Borussia Mönchengladbach, and the first thing he wanted to do is get me over and sign me, and it took a bit longer. First, I didn't want to leave Schalke, and it took 6 months until I decided to join him at Borussia Mönchengladbach when I signed in January 2007.
That's amazing. And maybe tell me a little bit about your relationship with your Pankas. You did mention he was kind of a father figure to you. How much did he influence your playing career in terms of, you know, what kind of tips did he provide, and how did he help you progress your professional career going forward?
Yeah, as I said, he was the coach who gave me a chance to train with the first team at Schalke. I mean, I was 16. I was still playing in the under 17. I'm the youngest player ever who trained with the first team at the time. So he really inspired me and believed in me. And yeah, as I said, we still have close contact. And through my whole career, I always asked him for advice. We were always very close, and yeah, I think I'm very fortunate to have someone like him behind me, because he really helped me a lot during my whole career.
That's actually amazing. I love hearing those kinds of stories, and yeah, having that kind of relationship is actually amazing to hear. From Gladbach, you spent 2.5 seasons there, off to Bayern in the 2009-2010 season. How did that move transpire, being that you know, you'd spent a few years at Gladbach. How did Bayern approach you, first of all, and what really sealed the deal to head there, even if it was a short stay in the end?
Yeah, my season at the time, I think, was 2008-2009 in Mönchengladbach was really good. We had a young team, almost got relegated, but we saved ourselves at the last round of the season. But I signed with Bayern very early, 6 months before my contract finished. I already took this decision and signed with them. So I think if you have the chance to sign for one of the biggest clubs in the world, you have to take it. And I was very young at the time. And I mean, my expectation wasn't to go there and play every game, but it was a bit unlucky because when I signed at Bayern, Jürgen Klinsmann was the coach and he really wanted to sign me and pushed for that. So, as I said, I signed in January for the following season, 6 months earlier. And then during this time, when I was still playing for Mönchengladbach, Jürgen Klinsmann got fired and they signed Louis van Gaal for the upcoming season. So once I joined them, Louis van Gaal was there and he made me clear, quite clear from the beginning, that he doesn't really know me, and signed one or two other players in my position. And yeah, it was quite hard from the beginning for me. And this is why I also then decided very quick to leave Bayern again and go back to Schalke, where I got way more game time and was always also competing to maybe winning the Bundesliga. And yeah, we almost made it, but lost to Bayern, I think, three rounds before the season finished. So Bayern won it, but yeah, I still got way more game time. So that's why I decided to sign for Schalke then.
That is interesting you say that, because we sometimes see, especially nowadays, players signing for Bayern Munich and, you know, they're not worried about game time, or they don't give off the perception that they're, you know, they're worried about it. They're just more or less happy to just be at the club. I get the impression from your short stint at Bayern that, you know, as a player, you want to feel wanted, and knowing that Louis van Gaal didn't really want you, did that really kind of upset your rhythm, even being there and more or less seeking for an exit to go back to Schalke, or even if it was a different club? Did that really kind of play a quick role in, I need to maybe change what happens?
Yeah, as I said before, the plan was to slowly get into the first team and get some game time in my first year, and then slowly getting into the first 11. But Louis van Gaal made me really very clear early that he is not really planning with me, that I even tried to leave the club again after 7-8 weeks, but they didn't let me go, so it took a bit longer. But yeah, it was not easy for me because I came with different expectations, and then not playing much was really, really hard. And I just can't understand sometimes young players that are just happy to be at a club, because I think the most important thing for a young player is to play as much football as you can. And this is why I took this decision. I mean, I had 4 years contract at Bayern, and I think maybe looking back, I could have had a little bit more patience, but I just wanted to play more, and this is why I left. The only thing is, 1 year after I left Bayern, Jupp Heynckes signed with them, so I think if I would have been there still, then things would be different for me. But yeah, looking back, I'm still happy with my decision going back to Schalke, because we were really successful over there also. And looking back, could have been more patient there, but it was also the right decision.
It's interesting because if you look at your kind of early sort of career, you go from Schalke, Gladbach, Bayern, back to Schalke. In that time period, had Schalke changed in the way it operated, or was it almost coming back to something super familiar? You knew exactly what you were going to get from the club, and the way it was perceived as well. Was it like almost like coming back home in a way?
Yeah, it was like coming back home for sure, but lots of things changed. I mean, when I left Schalke in January 2007, Schalke was really on top, like I said, close to Bayern, and they had lots of big players, big names. And then in the time when I was at Borussia Mönchengladbach, they got a bit into financial problems, and also they had higher expectations, which what they really what was really realistic, and they couldn't achieve their expectations. So they had some issues, and then they signed Felix Magath, and he was manager and sporting director, so he got the whole power to do whatever he wanted. And that changed the culture a little bit at Schalke. But yeah, there was still lots of players that I played with earlier, and yeah, for me it was just like coming home. I could have gone to lots of other clubs also, Borussia Dortmund, Leverkusen, like all the other big clubs in Germany, but for me it was just one club that I wanted to play for again, that was Schalke.
I remember a conversation I had a few years ago with Daniel Adlung, who was at Wolfsburg when Felix Magath led them to the title. How was he like as a coach? Because I remember one thing he would, it was all about work ethic and, training hard and playing hard. Was that quite similar at his when you had him at Schalke, or was he a bit different in his approach? How was Felix as a manager?
No, crazy. I mean, he was successful everywhere he was, and he was at Bayern as a coach. He won the Bundesliga and the Cup twice in 2 years. He won the Champions League as a player. He scored in the Champions League final when Hamburg beat Juventus, and he w won the Bundesliga with Stuttgart. So he was really, yeah, also with Wolfsburg when Daniel Adlung was there. So he was really successful as a manager and as a player. But yeah, it's really crazy. I mean, he's probably the hardest coach on this planet. So for me, it was good to have him very early in my career, because everything that came after that was nothing. And whenever I was really getting tired, or I thought that's a hard training session, I was just looking back and thinking about the training sessions with Felix Magath, and I easily could just handle every other situation in my career. So he's really crazy as a person, crazy as a coach, but yeah, just successful. And also at the time, as I said, with Schalke, we had a really young team, and still almost won the Bundesliga. We were second in the league, and the year after, he brought us in the Champions League quarterfinals and in the Cup final, and before he got fired. And yeah, even in this time at Schalke, he was quite successful.
It was such a fun team, and it's funny you bring about the kind of wild side of Magath, and we kind of got to see that for those who watch the Zweite Bundesliga. He was part of Würzburger Kickers, and he was, I think he fired at least five different managers throughout the
Yeah.
season. He's a character. I think that's the best way to kind of describe him. After your time in Schalke, you went to Kaiserslautern, who were playing in the Zweite Bundesliga. Well, what was the motive behind a move to Lautern? Was it specifically game time? A change of scenery? Kaiserslautern historically another really big club, although you look at their success, it may not really showcase, but they are quite a significant club in the history of the Bundesliga. What drew you to join them?
Yeah, look, at this time, I think it was the 2011-2012 season. At Schalke, I played the preseason. Huub Stevens was the coach, and 1 week before the season started, he told me that it would be hard for me to get enough game time. He recommended me to go somewhere else. At the time, it was a bit disappointing for me because it was also 2 weeks or 1 week before the transfer window closed, and all the clubs at this stage normally have their squads full. So the only really thing that interested me at the time was going to Kaiserslautern, even if it was a second division. I mean, they just got relegated and had the ambition to get back into Bundesliga straight away. So yeah, I just signed a one-year deal at Kaiserslautern, and yeah, we almost made it. We just lost in the relegation games against a very good Hoffenheim team. And yeah, then after this 8 or 9 months I've been at Kaiserslautern, I just signed back in the Bundesliga for Hertha Berlin.
And it was an interesting season, that season with Kaiserslautern. Statistically, one of your best. 5 goals, 10 assists from 25 appearances. Also scoring and assisting in the relegation playoff battle. I have to ask, the playoff battles are... They're just different in the way the games are played and the atmosphere. How difficult are those relegation playoff battles, knowing that at the end of 180 minutes, you know, there is a possibility that you may not get promoted at all, even if you put you play your two best games?
Yeah, I think the circumstances are really important for those games. Normally, if you have a run at the end of the season, either as a second division or first division team, then you have a big advantage. And we had a good run. I think we won the last two or three games of the regular season, and then secure the third place of the table to play those relegation games. And in the Bundesliga, Hoffenheim was almost relegated already, and Fortuna Düsseldorf was just losing the last three or four games, and they were almost safe. And then in the last round, Hoffenheim played against Borussia Dortmund away, and Düsseldorf, I think, played against Hannover. They just needed a point, and they lost, and Hoffenheim won against Borussia Dortmund. So they had a big boost out of that. They saved themselves into the relegation games on the last round, and I think if you would have played Fortuna Düsseldorf, it would have been way easier for us, because they had a negative run, and Hoffenheim just got the boost, and they had a really good team with players like Firmino at the time and lots of other big players. So it was really hard for us, but yeah, I think we lost 3-1 away, scored an away goal. Means we needed 2-0 at home. Started really well, conceded a goal then, and then I think 1-1. Had another chance to go up 2-1, but yeah, unfortunately we didn't make it. And yeah, since then Kaiserslautern is just going worse and worse, and actually they're playing now in the third division. Almost got relegated to fourth division last season, which also really hurts them, because they have also amazing fans, amazing stadium, and they also, in my opinion, belong to be in the first Bundesliga.
I wanted to touch on that fan culture, because Germany has one of the more unique and special fan scenes in world football. How do you describe it when you've played for so many big name clubs like Munich, Bayern Munich, Gladbach, Schalke, Kaiserslautern, and even Hertha? What kind of pressure is there when you know that at the end of each game, win, loss or draw, you've got to face the music to the ultras? How difficult is that in terms of, like, we see in English football when the game finishes, they all dart for the tunnel and it's all here and there. But in German football, what we always see is that at the end of the game, win, loss or draw, you face the music, whether it's good or not. How is that dynamic as a footballer?
Yeah, look, I mean, as a young kid, when I was a boy, I grew up with all this culture, you know, so I didn't even know it different. So growing up with that and always having this dream to play in front of those fans, you just get used to it. I mean, as you said, it's always pressure, and also the support when you have 60,000 people behind you, like we had in Schalke, for example. It's also a big push for you and for the team. But yeah, in Germany, just like everyone loves football, you get confronted with football everywhere. I mean, if you go to the bakery in the morning or to the petrol station, people recognize you everywhere and just speak about football. If you lose, they ask you what happened. If you win, they just say, yeah, good game, and continue like that. So wherever you go, you get confronted with football, and I think that really makes it special. Sometimes it's a bit annoying, but as I said, I just know it that way since I was really young and I grew up like this. So for me, it was just normal. And here in Australia, it's a bit different. So here I can just relax and no one really speaks about football. But at the time in Germany, and it's still like that, football is just everything and everyone loves it and talks about it all the time.
And that actually segues perfectly into one of my next questions, which was, you know, over the past few seasons you've played in Brazil and Australia, how different is that sort of footballing atmosphere compared to what you experienced in Germany?
Sometimes it's hard to motivate yourself if you have just 5,000-6,000 people in the stadium. I mean, what I love about Germany is when you enter the stadium for the warm-up, the stadium is already full. When you play away, you get booed once you come out to the warm-up. If you play home, the supporters already support you through the warm-up. And once the game started, you are just 110% focused on the game. So this is one of the main things I really miss here in Australia, this support and this passionate fans. But yeah, it is how it is, and you can't have this kind of passion everywhere. I mean, football is not sports number one here in Australia, so I think maybe if you look to America, I think the MLS is going into the right direction, and if Australia can take this a little bit as a role model, then I think they could build something similar here in Australia also.
As a Australian, I 100% agree with you. I think the way that the FFA kind of runs the competition doesn't really lend itself to sort of fan culture. And I think what we've seen is that, you know, the football fan scene in Australia is very stale, and it doesn't really allow for expression. Or, you know, I think we've seen with like West Sydney Wanderers, for example, who try to have this massive fan culture, and, you know, every time they would kind of show some sort of expression, the FFA would kind of shut that down. I do want to talk about one game in particular. I'm going to go back to your time at Schalke. It would be amiss of me not to talk about it, which is the Revere Derby, which is, for those who don't know, it is the biggest derby in German football between Schalke and Borussia Dortmund, two sides who have been long at it, and there is no love lost between either of those sides. You've played in a few of those games, Alex. How different is the kind of the atmosphere, the tension, and the knowledge of knowing that this is such a big game to the fans?
Yeah, just crazy. I mean, the cities are 30 kilometers away from each other, so it's so close. It's just crazy. Once the derby week starts, everyone just talks about it, and it's just the most important game for the fans. So I was fortunate to play some derbies, and especially when you play away. I mean, when you played in Dortmund and there's 85,000 fans in the stadium, it's just a crazy atmosphere, and so much fun also. But yeah, I think that the derbies, especially the Ruhr derby between Schalke and Dortmund, are the biggest games for those supporters, and just crazy to play those games.
It was hard. It's really hard to explain to people who don't follow the Bundesliga how massive this game is. I do want to talk about your time here in Australia, because you've spent the last three seasons in New South Wales, playing with West Sydney Wanderers and Sydney FC. How would you describe your time playing in the A-League, and what is the biggest takeaway from your experience playing football in Australia?
Yeah, I mean, especially the last two games with Sydney FC were amazing. I mean, I decided to sign for Sydney because I wanted to win trophies in our first league. I think we just dominated the league. We could break all the records, points, most goals, most wins, everything. But then once the Corona break came after that, and winning the league very early, I think we just didn't perform as well as we were supposed to anymore. Sometimes this is also natural. If you win the league already and all the pressure goes away, then you do automatically some percent less. But the 2 years at Sydney were really amazing for me. Last season, a bit unlucky, especially with the final, being one man down after 30 minutes, playing 60 minutes with one less, and scoring the 1-0, and then concede the equalizer 1 minute after. So everything went really against us. But yeah, at the end of the day, I will never forget these 2 years. And it was just an amazing experience to win those trophies, and I really enjoyed enjoyed those 3 years. I mean, I don't know, maybe I continue in Australia. We still don't know, but even if I leave, I can always look back for a very successful time.
It's like you're reading the notes because it segues into another question of mine, which is you are now a free agent. I know we were talking off air about some potential options. Is there anywhere in particular you'd like to play? Is there a maybe an opportunity to return back to Germany and go from there, or do you want to play in Asia? Where do you see maybe your next move?
Yeah, look, I'm 34 now. I'm still top fit, and I'm looking forward to do something new. I mean, I can't really say where it will be because I really don't know yet, and I'm listening to all the options and all the opportunities. But yeah, I always said that I would like to play in Asia, especially now. After playing Asian Champions League with Sydney, competing against those strong Asian clubs, it would be really amazing to play maybe for Japanese or Chinese or Korean club and competing in the Champions League, because then you have a way bigger chance to maybe win it. But I still don't know. I mean, also now with COVID, it's a bit difficult to get into some of those countries. The market in general is not really moving much. I mean, even Messi is still a free agent, so I still take my time, and I wait for the right thing, and then take the right decision.
Well, if there's any clubs listening to this podcast, you should sign Alex. Like, this is
Yeah.
an endorsement to sign Alexander Bamyan. That's just a non-negotiable. Get this man at a football club as soon as possible. This is my final question. When you do eventually hang up the boots, which is hopefully not anytime soon, where do you see yourself after football? I know that the tendency is ex-players go into coaching, broadcasting, or maybe they just move away from football altogether. I know this is a bit of a tricky question to ask, but where do you envision yourself after football?
Yeah, first of all, I still want to play 3 or 4 more years. I mean, especially in Australia and even in those Asian countries, you can see that each club has 2, 3, 4 players over 35, 36. So I still want to play as much as I can. And I think I still have probably 3 or 4 more years in me on this level. And then I think there will open some doors my career after football, but I really don't know yet. I don't really think that I see myself into coaching. I mean, I'm studying international sport management since last year, just to do something. This is something that interests me. So if I stay in football after, I see myself more in a director position over being a coach. But yeah, you never know which doors will open after football, but we will just see and wait what happens in the next couple of years.
I certainly will be paying attention to see what your next move is. Alex, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. I wish you all the best, and hopefully we'll see you at a football club soon.
Thank you so much.
It was great chatting to Alex about his career to date, and his experiences were fascinating. I really enjoyed hearing about his relationship with the legendary Joep Heynckes and how much his influence helped Alex become the footballer he is today. Alex, thank you so much for your time. It was a joy to sit down and chat. I hope we see you back on the pitch very soon. Tune in next time for another edition of 101, and if you've missed any of my previous conversations, be sure to check those out too. To stay up to date with the podcast, go and follow me on Twitter @MatthewCarrigage. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.